League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hi, everyone. Not sure if you can hear the beautiful birds in the background, but I'm still in Hawaii avoiding John, so we're doing a little bit of a flashback episode today. But shh, don't tell him. I don't want him knowing where I am.
Shaking.
Darren's still giggling.
I'm giggling because, well, first off, I'm Darren Karp and I'm here with John Thrasher. Hi. Thank you for joining us on Shaken and Disturbed. But I'm giggling because, you know, where our NMRs start is very rare for where they end up.
Know.
Even though we have an
agenda. It's so true. I was thinking that too.
And this really, you know, and sometimes before the show, full disclosure on our NMRs, I'll say to John, like, oh my God, I had something to tell you. Or like, and I can't remember. And I was like, just keep going. I'll remember, like, as we're in conversation. And I would say 80% of the time, I honestly remember, like, what I wanted to say, because you'll say something and it sparks something in my mind. But even today, like, none of the things I wanted to say to you, I actually had planned in my head. I just,
it was
just
a mess.
For it.
Yeah, it was good. We started with TikTok, and then we went into 45 minutes of love language, into
an
in-depth character
of
analysis of Pee Wee Herman and how it's affected our childhood. So check it out. It's on the public feed right now. You can go hear Darren laugh.
It was an in-depth convo. That's for sure true. But
by the way,
are you doing?
Yeah, I'm going to clip out that moment about Pee Wee, and we'll see what comes out of it.
I think that's a must, and I think you know the quote that I want you to clip out.
No, yeah, that's fine.
I think you know.
Maybe
it's
anyway,
the title of the episode. Anyway,
maybe.
Welcome to Shaken and Disturbed.
Yes.
Let's get into this week's
case. Let's do this.
I am ready and raring to go as we kind of are nearing the end of summer.
I know. It's so weird. Summer is like...
Kids are like back at school.
I know. This week, my nephew...
I forget. Yeah,
I know. Well, like, I was just thinking yesterday, I was like, was summer only 2 months? Like, really, it's only 2 months. You get out mid-June, you're back in mid-August, really.
For grade school?
Yeah, for grade school, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, but I think as a kid, that feels like so long. And when you're an adult, it isn't.
Yeah, no,
you know,
it truly
like
isn't.
Everything when you're an adult takes a long time. You know, like if you were, if it's like, oh, I got to order this piece of furniture. And it's like, okay, it's going to take 2 months for this part to come in. You'd be like, all right, I could do it. As a kid, 2 months is
two
like.
2 months? What?
That's why relationships, people always be like, yeah, I was in a really long relationship for like 2 months when they're in like eighth grade.
Who said that? Like, oh, I was going to say eighth grade. I was like, I hope you didn't say that.
Who said that?
Yeah, who said that? Who said that? Remember that from
Who
Brava.
Said that?
Said
of course.
That? Nah, who Candy. Said that? Yeah, Candy and Portia.
Are you watching Atlanta this year, by the way?
I'm not. I really want to get back into it because I've been kind of haphazard about Atlanta the last several seasons, but I do love that season, that show.
Well, season's coming to an end. But anyway, neither here nor there. Let's get
just
into
like
some
the summer.
Crime.
Yeah, let's get into this week's crime episode. Here we go.
So this one actually happens relatively recently in terms of, you know, time.
Yeah,
in 2010, 23-year-old Julie
Kibuishi.
Kibuishi.
Yeah, I think that's
was
right.
One of the most popular dance instructors at the Orange County School of Arts in Southern California. I will ask Nadine about.
I was
going to
say, can you
Orange
walk
County
over and
School
do the show?
Arts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will.
From
I
there.
Will ask. Let me see. 23, 2010. How old were you? I was 22 in 2010.
Oh, so she's our age. Interesting.
She's our age. Well, she was born on Valentine's Day, Julie was, on February 14th. Julie was the third sibling and first daughter of her parents' four children. Her mom called her my Valentine girl. And my grandmother's birthday was on Valentine's Day. And I always just thought that was on my father's side. And I always just thought that was so sweet.
I know.
Something about being born on like a, you know, and I get it. It's
a
an artificial holiday.
Day.
Like, yeah, but it's like there's something nice about it being red and it's romantic and that's just sweet.
I want to say that shout out to one of my best friends, Philip. He was also born on Valentine's Day.
Philip, the
You've
one
met
who
Philip. Yeah.
On our Zooms. Yeah, of course. Shout out to Philip. Yes. Well, she loved dancing and was known to be both an incredibly talented performer and a kind teacher to her students.
Oh, wait, sorry.
Neither of those two things I could be. Yeah, what?
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, I realize you meant a different Philip, who is a fan of our show, who is a wonderful human. But I meant Philip. Huh?
I was going to say, but not your friend. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, he is my friend. He's not one of my best friends, though. But Philip was at my 30th birthday party. You probably would remember him if you saw him. Yeah.
Got it. That's how I feel about just clarifying. The listeners. That's all.
Yeah, me too. I agree. Listeners are our children. That's the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe
in our future.
Children.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, in addition to working as a dance
coach.
What a
fun intro to the show. Here we go.
Four bullet points in. In addition to working as a dance coach, Julie was in the middle of completing a degree in fashion design. In the spring semester, she enrolled in an anthropology course and sought the help of a tutor, 26-year-old Sam Herr. Did you ever take anthropology in college?
I want to say yes. Is that like sociology?
There's anthropology and sociology. They're both usually in like similar... Like sociology 101 and anthro 101 are two popular courses that are kind of in the same.
Oh, anthro is like development of human mind.
Right.
Like science.
Like being I think like more of, I wouldn't even know how to kind of
the answer is
it,
no.
But it is
the answer to that question is no.
I was in an anthro 101 class at Lafayette, but my girlfriend at the time wanted me to go into her religion class. And so I dropped it and went into her class.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Anyway, oh, dear. More on that another time.
Oh, dear. Well,
this
so
is the
here's
one
this
I'm
tutor.
Thinking of, right? The one I'm thinking
Regina.
Of.
Regina.
I don't
first
remember
girlfriend.
The name. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
oh, girlfriend. Okay. Yep. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So she meets this tutor, 26-year-old Sam Herr. And once they began working together, Sam and Julie quickly developed a close mentor-mentee relationship. I'm sure we all know where this is going.
It sounds a little bit like a porn, to be honest. Uh-oh, I'm bad at
math.
Very
easy to find a TA.
Plus two. Yep.
That's right. Like, I can't figure out my calculator, Dr. Thrasher.
Yeah. Oh,
you're a doctor now.
Well, we know where Darren's mind is going. Keep going. Interesting. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, towards the end of May, Sam made plans to visit his parents, Stephen and Raquel, for the weekend. And Stephen and Raquel were fairly close with their son and had even gently asked about his relationship with Julie, wondering if there was any potential for romance. However, Sam was adamant that it simply wasn't like that, telling his parents, quote, she's like my kid's sister. Ooh, that's like being friend zoned by a dude, which feels very weird to me because I feel like dudes friend zone less than
that's
women
true.
Friend zone dudes
in
but
straight relationships you mean yes
yeah
sure.
that's what I mean
yeah I mean she's like my kid sister he says you know a lot of people would ask about you and me and I'd be like don't make me puke she's like my kid sister
I'd be like he's my grandfather
grandmother but that's fine nonetheless so basically friend zoned. Go ahead, what were you gonna say? I didn't want to interrupt you there.
I was gonna say if you're a mother to me in that generation but when you go two generations up you become
a grandfather that makes sense.
Yes, exactly. Like you're a great grandmother but you're only a grandfather and a mother.
I love that
right because you're my brother, you know.
That's true. Yeah,
it skips a generation
anyway. We make the rules up here, guys, by the way, if you're confused. So
yeah, no, I think at this point, like a 900,000 episodes in, they're not confused.
They're not confused. They should be able to follow
along.
They get it. Yeah, yeah.
They get it, yeah.
So anyway, on Friday, May 21st, Julie went to visit her brother, Taka. He was planning a wedding and she was a bridesmaid. And there was a lot of planning to discuss, essentially. During this visit, Taka gave Julie a tiara to wear during the wedding, which was interesting.
Imagine me in a tiara.
I think you would look good in a tiara, actually.
But like,
I mean,
for my wedding.
Weird. Yeah,
like
not for
your
wedding.
Like in a white dress. Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, excited, she put it on immediately. And around 11 p.m., she received a text message from Sam and let her brother know that she planned to stop by her friend's apartment on the way home. So Taka reminded his little sister to be careful, asking her to text him when she arrived at Sam's place. Well, about an hour later, Taka received a message from Julie saying, quote, I'm here. Don't worry. By the way, already, if you know, already feeling a little sus about this.
Although, you know, I'm here. The I'm here, don't worry is weird. I would just be like, I'm here. Like, all is good. The don't worry. I don't know.
I know. That's weird. That is weird. By the way, I should take a minute to to promote something on the new iOS 17, which I think is coming out in September. There's a feature where, you know, whenever you're like just like this, like you're with a group of friends and you're like, oh, text me whenever you get home. I want to make sure you got home safe. There's now a feature on the phone where you can, whenever you arrive home, the other person will receive a notification so that you don't have to constantly text or check in, or if someone gets home and falls asleep.
But how will they know, like,
you have to like allow it. You have to allow it. So like,
okay,
it'll turn on, it'll pop into your iMessage. And then when they arrive home or wherever their destination is, it'll just automatically send the message that's like, hey, you know, this person made it home. Is that what you're asking?
Okay, but I'm kind of asking like, and this is neither here nor there, just an interesting question, but like, is it a setting on my phone? Like, how will they know to text you? If I'm hanging out with you one night and Nadine the next night, will it know to text you and know to text Nadine?
Oh,
how would that work?
You
I'm
set
saying.
It up like, between each other on your text messages. It's Find My Friends, but only you two would know. Yeah.
Got it. Because I will say, I always want to know when my friends get home.
Me
and my
too.
Friends always ask me, but I do forget like 50% of the time.
Me too. Yeah.
And so that's a good feature. Yeah.
And it's a good feature, and it's relevant to all of us who are trying to stay safe and not get abducted, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Steve recalls, quote, throughout the day I was calling his phone, but it was off and Sam never turned his phone off.
Sorry, one second.
Yeah.
You missed.
Did I miss something?
14.
You're right.
Yeah. Just because we ended up.
Thank you.
All good.
I'm over here trying to let everyone know about new iOS safety features, Darren. Can you give me a little bit of a break? Okay. So before this happens, guys, on Saturday, May 22nd, Raquel and Steve expected Sam to come home to spend some time together, but never heard from him. So then Steve recalls, that's right, that throughout the day I was calling his phone, but it was off and Sam never turned his phone off. So very weird circumstances here. Again, that iOS feature, you know, you would know early on, like if they never made it home, you're probably going to know that, or you're going to have that information.
To me, having someone's phone off, like of anyone that I would genuinely care about if they got home, or anyone who's in my close life, like my closest 15 people, having their phone off would be an immediate red flag. Like,
me
I don't really know a lot of people who don't think
never.
About at least the power of their phone.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so it'd be very rare. Maybe my brother, because he's dumb. But
I can't I can't even remember the last time my phone was turned off, like completely off, you know, like who even does that?
Yeah, unless it was like a fluke. So that immediately to me, even in 2010.
Yeah, that's weird.
Just
that's
feels weird. Wrong to me. Yeah.
So growing increasingly worried, Steve decided to drive over to Sam's apartment. When he entered, he was shocked at the gruesome scene that met him. Inside the apartment, Steve found Julie's body facing down on Sam's bed with a gunshot wound to her head.
Jesus.
Although only one gunshot was visible at the crime scene, an autopsy later revealed she had actually been shot twice. Some of Julie's clothing had been torn off, and her killer had added several bizarre touches to the scene. The tiara was placed atop Julie's mangled head, and on the back of her sweater were written the words, quote, all yours, fuck you, end quote.
Whoa.
Steve was in shock and immediately telephoned the police, who, of course, were immediately suspicious of Sam because, by the way, you know, we don't really know what's up with Sam at this point.
I mean, right now, obviously, we know she went to go see him, but like the tiara being placed atop her head, she doesn't have a boyfriend. We don't know enough about Sam, but presumably if they have something going on, all yours, fuck you.
Yeah, there's something.
That's very sussy to me.
Yeah,
I can't really figure this out yet.
But also
normally have a good sense of something.
And I mean, to put it on her clothing, too, is a little bit weird, right? The back, the writing on the back of her sweater. Like, who would, like, what's the point of that, you know?
I wonder if this was Sam's. I don't know. Maybe Sam had a lover or something like that.
Oh, maybe.
And
but
so
to write
like,
something on a sweater is just so odd, you know? Like,
right. But maybe it's a message to Sam being like,
probably. Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally.
Let's keep going.
Yeah.
Well, Sam was an Army veteran who had been displaying signs of PTSD since returning home from Afghanistan. Steve called the police knowing full well that his son would likely be an initial suspect, later stating, quote, there's a dead woman in my son's apartment and he's missing. He's gone. I'm not stupid. I know the suspicions are going to be on him, end quote, which, yes, of course, kind of
does. Of course,
especially with possession being 9/10 of the law, if someone's going to show up dead in your apartment.
Right.
And you're not there to call it in, a la coming home to the scene.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't look good. And police were able to obtain the details of the most recent text messages sent from Sam's phone, showing that at 2:45 p.m. the previous day, Friday, May 21st, he had spoken to Julie, letting her know he planned to help out a neighbor named Dan Wozniak before leaving for his parents' house. Now, 2 hours later, he texted Julie again, this time with a couple of more sinister seeming messages that read, quote, "Can you come over tonight at midnight alone? Very upset. Need to talk."
Okay.
The next message read, quote, "I'm hurting with some family crap. I can't be alone. No sex. Please, I'm begging as a brother."
Interesting. Now,
the "no sex" and "please, I'm begging as a brother" doesn't need to go into the same sentence, does it?
I guess. I mean, it's hard to say exactly what their relationship was, I guess.
Hard to say, but it's hard to say if these text messages are even coming from him.
Yeah, that's true. Like, who actually, yeah, you're right. Who knows exactly
what's
going on?
But then again, maybe the PTSD.
That's right. Yeah.
We don't know this Dan Wozniak guy. Yeah. Seeing these messages dramatically increased law enforcement's suspicion, that Sam was the killer. But Steve wasn't so sure. Remember, Steve's his father. He did he did some digging himself, looking into recent activity occurring in the bank account he shared with his son. And Steve discovered that since Sam vanished, several ATM withdrawals had been made from the account about 20 miles away. In Long Beach. That's not that far.
Yeah, no.
Like, I mean, you're keeping in the state, you know, it's like you flee to Mexico, I feel like, if you do something. Right. You flee the country. You are on the border of something, you know.
True.
Now, when the bank sent the ATM camera footage to police, they were stunned to discover that it wasn't Sam making the withdrawals at all. In fact, nobody who saw the tape, including Steve and Raquel, could actually identify the man. Mm. In addition to the ATM withdrawals, the thief had made one additional purchase. He had ordered pizza. He had ordered pizza delivery from a local parlor in Long Beach.
It's one thing if you,
as a New Yorker, it depends on the pizza.
Well, yeah, but it's one thing if you go and pick it up, which most New Yorkers do. You're ordering delivery. I mean, that's like crime 101. You don't do that.
Yeah, it is kind of odd, especially if you're taking an withdrawal. Pay the pizza in cash.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I don't know. Well, I guess maybe they could just tap. I don't know. But police monitored the card activity until May 26th, when a second charge was made to the same pizza place. Detectives were then able to track the delivery to the suspect's location, the home of a 16-year-old boy named Wesley Freilich, who had ordered a pie to share with his friends.
Now, this is getting weird.
Okay. Police rushed to the home, handcuffed the group of teens, and raided the house. However, they soon realized that there was nobody home but Wesley, his mom, and his friends, and clearly none of them were involved in Julie's murder. I mean, that seems like kind of the most harmless, like...
I mean, if you could think of anything more Americana than a group of teens ordering pizza, like, come on now.
But it's not like nothing led the police there.
Well,
they
discover
Sam's bank card in Wesley's possession and obviously demanded to know where he'd gotten it.
There you go. So Wesley told investigators that a man named Dan from his mother's community theater group had given him the card.
Dan Wozniak.
That's right. Dan told Wesley that he was a bail bondsman. Sam owed him money and he needed the teen's help to withdraw $1,900 in cash that rightfully belonged to him. So he's setting this teen up. Wesley added that Dan, quote, had an actual folder of paperwork saying this was all legal. That's when he pulled out the ATM card and gave me instructions to withdraw the full amount and to make sure I wore a hat and glasses, end quote. Red flag.
Yeah.
Police identified Dan Wozniak as a community theater member who gave Wesley the bank card. Now, the same evening as the raid on Wesley's house, detectives called Dan in for questioning, but it seemed like he was unavailable. Oh,
I'm sure.
Didn't expect that. I'm busy, guys.
Yeah, I'm busy.
Dan was about to be married to another community theater member, Rachel, and on the evening of May 26th, he was at his own bachelor party. Learning this, police decided to crash the party, later stating that, quote, immediately when he saw, you could see the blood drain from his face.
Right, unless it was like sexy cops, and then he thought that it was like striptease at his bachelor party. Alas, I imagine it wasn't sexy cops. I'm going out on a limb and saying it might not have been sexy cops. Yeah.
Well, law enforcement were then able to persuade Dan into coming to the station for questioning, where he confessed to using Wesley for his ATM card scam. Dan first informed police that he had stolen the card, hoping to withdraw a substantial amount of cash before Sam reported it stolen and the bank reimbursed his money.
Okay.
When pressed, however, Dan's story began to change. He then told police that Sam had come to his apartment on the morning of May 22nd, saying he had done something bad, then confessed to murdering Julie. Okay, this is what Dan's story is about this. So Dan then told police, by the way, are you feeling Dan, your wife is here yet? I'm kind of feeling that.
Yes, totally. I've been feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we'll have to wait till we get to listener shout outs about that. But anyway, Dan then told police that he had been inside Sam's apartment on the 22nd, had seen Julie's body and saw two gunshots in her head.
This, okay, of course, it's interesting that he would say that, because I was going to say, okay, two gunshots, whereas only one was kind of visible if he saw it. Remember that they said that only one gunshot was visible, but then upon further investigation, they found she was actually shot twice.
Yep.
So however she was laying was how the police found her.
Right.
And for him to say he saw two gunshots doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make sense.
The bullets in the head and knew it was two.
Look at Miss Investigator Private Eye Darren Carpet may have figured out this case, you guys.
I mean, I know you're getting to it. I'm just like coming to it. You know, I like to freely
talk. Made the point. Of course, that what you just said piqued the interest of the interrogators. Because like you said, it wasn't until the autopsy that it was determined that she had been shot twice, as Darren said. So detectives requested Dan provide a DNA sample to rule him out as a suspect. I'm assuming they were able to collect some sort of DNA from the body or the crime scene.
It must be, and it can't just be from the apartment, because obviously, given the fact that they were kind of neighbors, in theory, it could have been possible that he would have been there anyway. But that evening, Dan phoned his fiance, Rachel, from the station, but the couple didn't realize the call was being monitored by the police.
Oh, I love this.
Can the police just do that? Does it matter what state it is? Do they have a warrant to do it?
They have to, I think after they have probable cause, they can get the warrant from a judge and then monitor. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Well, I'm not an expert, though. I have no idea for sure.
Well, I mean, I did watch The Wire, and that's what they had to do. Then, I just wasn't sure if that changed per state. If anyone, I
have a feeling
we can look this
state.
Up, but I'm
it's
just
definitely
like,
a state by
right,
state.
Right. It's not a federal. Yeah, it's not that. Yeah. So while on the phone, Rachel spoke openly. That's right, because some states it'll be like you only need one party's consent to be recorded on a conversation. Sometimes it's neither. Okay, so while on the phone, Rachel spoke openly about a bag full of incriminating evidence against Dan that he had given his brother Tim to hold.
Oh dear. It seems now Tim's involved.
Okay, but it seems kind of careless for Rachel to just like, as his fiance, to just be like, by the way, on the phone.
Yeah.
There's incriminating evidence about you. Well, like, that seems careless. And why is she saying that?
Well, maybe Rachel's freaked out. Maybe she knows what's going on. And she's just like, any chance she gets, she's trying to get a hold of him, get rid of this stuff.
Right.
Who knows?
Or show her power that she knows something. I guess
that's true, too.
Dan
yeah.
obviously seemed concerned Rachel might tell police about the bag of evidence. And he begged her not to talk to them about it. On the following day, May 27th, Dan spoke to detectives again. And this time he shocked police by admitting to not just one murder, but two.
He probably
so you're guessing
just
guessing it. So go ahead.
No, sorry, not to interrupt. I didn't mean to interrupt there, but I was like, he's probably feeling the pressure, right? Because he clearly has something to hide here. And as we were about to get to, maybe even more than meets the eye.
Well, he's confessing to Julie and Sam's murder now, but I'm wondering if he's to your point, I wonder if he's doing this because whatever the incriminating evidence his fucking brother has, is it possible it's worse than murdering two people?
Right.
I mean,
maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, Dan went on to explain that Sam had recently mentioned having roughly $60,000 saved up in bank. Also seems weird.
It's always about the money, guys. Have you noticed that on the show?
But it's weird to talk about that with friends. Like, how
sometimes,
would Dan know? Like,
it's very interesting. I've noticed that, like, I don't know how to put this without sounding a certain way, but I think certain types of people are just way more comfortable talking about stuff like that.
I guess.
You know?
I guess.
So sometimes it's a status thing, too. Like, oh, by the way,
sure.
I have this amount of money.
And no judgment. I just, like, I don't really know what my friends have saved in their bank accounts.
Me either. I definitely don't.
Like, I might know if they're, I have that. Like, I might know if they have debt. But I won't know how much money they have.
Listen, you
want
to talk
like,
about my student
different.
Loans, everybody? Let's have a conversation.
Well, right. Or some of my friends would be like, best thing my parents ever did was not give me debt. Like, okay, so they don't have debt. Like, but I don't know if they have. It's just weird.
I get it.
You know?
I don't either.
Anyway.
I don't want to hear anything about anyone's money, especially after doing these shows, because I've learned that it's always about the money and I don't want anything to do with it, guys.
So I guess to your point, this could be an entirely normal conversation. I'm viewing it as like, that's sus. It feels like a made up story. that he would know that he had
$60,000. I see what you're saying. Okay.
You know what I mean? But I guess it's possible. So Dan, on the other hand, had no job, no savings, was about to be evicted from his apartment, was also about to be married, let's not forget. And he figured killing Sam and stealing his savings would be a simple solution to all of his problems. Of course.
Oh, sure.
It would even leave him enough to take his new bride on honeymoon. Well, I was going to say, of course, that's the first response is murder.
I was just going to say, this reminds me of all the conversations we had about people that are just trying to get out of their marriages. And so they think the only way to do it is to hire a hitman. I'm like, no, you can simply get divorced. It's okay. Like, there are protections. Right,
well, right. Exactly. But this is like, I'm just going to murder a neighbor to get his money. Right. It's like, you know, you could find a job.
You could chill. Yeah.
Yeah, you can find a job. Dan asked Sam to come to the attic, a nearby community theater, to help him move some boxes. And while moving them around, Dan asked Sam to bend down to help lift a particularly heavy box. While he bent down, Dan confessed to grabbing the gun and shooting Sam.
Oh, I hate that kind of murder.
Well, I mean, yeah.
The surprise murder. Oh, I hate that.
Especially in the back. And especially as he's helping you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess they're all a surprise technically, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So he informed his interrogators that Sam was still alive after being shot once, begging his friend for help. Mm. He said, "I need help. Something hit me. It felt like an electric shock." At which point Dan reloaded his gun, fired again, killing Sam.
Oh, I hate that so much. He didn't even realize.
Here's what's worse, though. Dan then dismembered his friend's body, some friend, dumped his remains in El Dorado Park in Long Beach, which would make sense about the 20 miles away ATM thing. After abandoning Sam's body, Dan then performed in a musical called Nine with Rachel.
Oh, it's like when Scott Peterson got Burger King, but it's like a performance. Cool.
I mean, there seems to be a little bit more evidence on this guy than even Scott.
No, I know.
Peterson,
I shouldn't say that about Scott Peterson, but is a convicted man, I should say, but there could be something else going on there. Yes.
Yeah. You could also just, like, I hate to say it, can't you just steal his debit card or something? Like, just steal
What is the point of this?
You know, I guess you'll get caught for fraud at some point, but like, take out $10,000 and do what you can do or something. Like, you got to kill the man. Jesus. Yeah.
Well, and only a few hours later, Dan used Sam's phone to text Julie, luring her to Sam's apartment. He told interrogators, quote, "Julie was wearing like a crown tiara. She had just come from her brother's. I said, Sam just called me and he was going through some stuff. She said, yeah, me too. I said, well, I have a key. Let's go in. Then I said, oh, by the way, did you see this in Sam's bed? Lean over right there. When she leaned over, I put two bullets in the back of her head," end quote. What a guy. Dan,
I'm also curious. I mean, they must have been close enough friends for this guy, Dan, to know that Julie existed.
Yeah, totally. 100%. I mean,
you know,
especially
so they were probably friendly to some extent.
And to be able to lure her, you know, and want to do this little activity. It's like, yeah, they must have trusted each other. Well, Dan hoped to cover his tracks by making it appear as though Sam had murdered Julie and then fled, which, of course, is what it kind of looked like in the very beginning.
Exactly.
Over the course of 2 days, detectives were able to locate Sam's remains in the park, finding his head on what would have been his 27th birthday.
Jesus.
They also located the backpack Rachel had spoken about on the phone. Inside, they found Sam's blood-soaked clothing, phone, wallet, the gun Dan had used to kill his victims, and the axe and saw that he used to dismember Sam. When they investigated Dan's computer, detectives found Google searches such as, quote, "how to hide a body" and, quote, "quick ways to kill people."
Okay, well, one, he's not a smart criminal, but two, at least we know that the evidence in the bag wasn't worse than murdering two people.
That's true.
In fact, it was all the evidence to prove that he murdered two people. So I guess him confessing at the end of the day was the right thing to do, but like, Jesus.
This guy sucks. Yeah, Dan was indicted and tried for two counts of first-degree murder, and then on December 16th, 2015, he was found guilty on both charges by a jury that later recommended the death penalty. Sam's dad, Steve, told the media, quote, "my only regret is that this state won't let me kill this coward myself." And of course, you have to understand the emotional reaction there from Sam's dad, Steve.
Any parent. Any family member, any loved one's going to say that for sure.
In 2018, Dan's former fiance, Rachel, was also found guilty of being an accessory after the fact and was sentenced to 32 months in prison.
Sorry to interrupt you, but it is kind of an interesting thing there, because let's just say they were take the murder of it aside, they could have had like a really healthy relationship and have been a really good couple and they trust each other. They were getting engaged. If your partner obviously told you this beyond horrendous thing, you're not the worst person to necessarily pause before running right to the police to do the right thing. You know, like you might love this person. You might want to protect this person. It's like a mother and a kid.
Well,
you know, or a father, any type of relationship with someone. It's not like you. Yes, she's an accessory. And I understand that in 32 months, it feels right because she ended up not doing the right thing by saying anything. But I also don't necessarily blame her either.
I understand what you're saying. It's also kind of like, what did she know? Maybe that's what it is. I mean, as far as we know, it's just bloody materials. And there were some phone calls. We know
and maybe
that
that's what she knew. But
and
she
that's all she knew.
Known.
Who knows exactly? Right. I mean, I'm sure we could research this even further and find out. But she's not a prominent person necessarily in this particular case today. But I mean...
It just makes one of those things where it's like, I can understand that. Like the father being like, I want to kill this motherfucker. Like, I'm so sorry. Like I couldn't be the one to kill him. Like, I understand that feeling. I also understand her feeling of like, if you do love someone, I'm not saying to do the, I'm saying to do the right thing, but I get
the logic. Yes.
The logic, or at least where you're coming from when you love somebody.
But also, and to just to add to that again is like, who knows how any of us would be in a situation like this?
Who
you know,
knows?
Darren, if you showed up and did this, like, would I immediately
run
to the police?
And
you have
so far.
And that'll be another podcast that we're working on to share with you.
No one knows for sure. That's the top, top tier of Patreon. That's
that's right. That's a special amount. Well, in 2019, the governor of California placed a moratorium on the death penalty. Dan, as well as 700 other inmates, are now no longer waiting to be executed. Dan is now 39 years old and is still currently in prison, where I think he rightfully belongs, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt in my mind. Or at least some type of mental rehabilitation of some sort.
Yeah, we hope so. Well, what an absolutely disturbing case. Let us know what you thought about the case. Hit us up at JThrasher at Carpe Darren.
Yes.
On TikTok at John Thrasher. We're going to get Darren on there eventually, guys. And we're going to do a TikTok live in the future, the two of us.
The
right, Kesha
song? TikTok,
okay. Speaking of TikTok, let's go into listener shout outs. I want to give a special TikTok live shout out to a handful of you guys that tuned in and supported me and kept me busy throughout, you know, the first couple ones that I've done. I think, you know, it's a little nerve wracking, but you guys made it really fun. Kelly Butterfly, who is just Kelly with
great
a butterfly
name.
Emoji, which I love. Faith, Joyce, Jade, Angel, Sky, Brittany, Annette, Ariana, and Patrick, Mitz, Addison, Carla, Courtney, Tyra, Fluffs, and a special shout out to my buddy Nate, who is a big true crime fan and came on and told Darren, told a catfish story that I won't say it on the show, but the catfish
Nate.
Story is wild. Okay. That's
did
all
it happen to him?
Yes. I tried to get him on. So I did the first one and that's when he came on and told it. And then on the second one I did, I kept inviting him to come on and talk about it. I know. Well, listen, maybe I'll do another one and I'll make sure that you're available. I don't want to say it because it's his story and maybe he can even come on the show.
Oh my God. Well, Nate, mazel tov for even saying
for surviving.
I want to know what it is.
Wait till you hear. Yeah. Those of you who are in the first, like Kelly, Faith, Joyce, I think even Jade, you guys heard it. So keep it to yourselves until we get Nate back on the show.
Keep that moment alive. But now my interest is peaked.
Yeah.
Crystal in our Facebook group made a very interesting point in referencing our previous podcast saying, currently on episode 40, blood, but no body. And Darren mentions her friend, Dan B. And all I kept saying is, Dan, hey Dan. Your wife is here. Your wife is here.
See?
Dan, your wife is here. Opportunity missed, LOL. But we made up for it this week because I just
that's
did
right.
It
we just did
we
a Dan
a
show.
Dan. We just did a Dan show.
Yeah.
Not our friend Dan B.
And shout out to Dan B. Hopefully he's listening.
And shout out to Dan B. Yes. Yep. Dan.
Your wife.
Your wife is here.
Yeah. Ugh, I hate that. Throwback to Martinis and Murder, by the way, if you don't know what we're talking about. But anyway, by the way, you can watch us ad free and with amazing backgrounds on Patreon. This episode
we've got
is
amazing
available.
Backgrounds. Yes, we do.
That's right. Thanks to me. Thank you very much. I made them for us.
That's right.
Yeah, you can follow us on Patreon for as little as $5 a month or sign up as a Sussy Radish to watch our video podcasts. Links are in the show description, or you can just go to patreon.com/shaken and disturbed.
real quick, John, are you going to add something, a little flair to your background like I have?
I know. I keep kind of forgetting.
I have a little bit more than you do.
You have Crocs. So. You have weed. You have headphones. You have a cat butt tissue holder. You've got everything. I do need to add something.
The cat butt tissue holder made it into my background is just
Is that the same color, by the way, as the one you have?
Yeah, it's the, I thought like so. The exact, it's like creamsicle. It's like the exact same color. It's like a little bit more orange at home, but the size is ginormous.
Yeah, it
you
is
know?
Big.
And I like that, like, there's too much stuff on that, on this counter right
there is.
And
on your
it's just,
Zoom.
It's true to life. Anyway,
did you take the cat butt tissue tissue holder to L.A.? That's the big
question.
You bet
I did.
Okay.
It's in LA, my friend.
All right.
It's in LA.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with a new episode. Check your freshies.
Check your brake pads without pants. And remember, apparently one of our friends told us you don't need a penis to do it. So
this
weird.
Is too long of a sign up. We got to work on that for you.
We got to. It's we're going to workshop it.
Yeah. All right. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.